Third hour of 3D here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. Predators and Vegas Golden Knights tonight. Third meeting between these two teams already this season. Third and final meeting here tonight. Predators will be home Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday this week, and they'll be back home again next Tuesday as well. We are joined by Predators GM David Poile. He has made his way to the desk with no coat, no gloves, no scarf, and we welcome him. David, how you doing?
Just want to make sure all the Nashvillians come out tonight to support the Predators, despite this untypical weather here in Nashville.
Well, it's interesting because I did have some of these type of conversations downstairs after morning skate because most of these players are from cold weather places, so they're kind of chuckling at, you know, 1-2. Now, some of the places, Clarksville, there's reports 6-7 inches. So in this area, that's a big deal. But you know, up north, Michigan, Wisconsin, Canada. I mean, this is laughable.
Yeah, but it's like I was born and raised in Canada, and it's what you're used to. And I get it down here. I mean, I'm not a good driver in this weather because they don't get the roads cleared
right
off clearly. But in any event, it's not too bad out there. It's going to have a good game tonight, and we got a top team in here. I mean, the Las Vegas Knights are not an expansion team. You're not your typical expansion team. They're really good, and you know, we haven't beat them in two games, so important game for us to get that done.
Let's come back to that. So what did you do during the bye week?
I went down to Florida with my wife for 4 days. It was great. Speaking of weather, we had good weather.
See, that's why you're the GM. Most of the players I talked to, they all went up north. I'm like, why did you go north in January?
Yeah,
you went south.
I don't get that. I feel good.
So, you know, and I asked some of the players this. Yes, you step away from the game, you take a break, but at some point you reflect on the first half of the season. Did you do any reflecting on the first half of the season? If so, what did you come up with?
Yeah, well, again, as we've talked in the past weeks, I mean, I think we've been moving along in a good fashion. I think we're happy with where our team is for the most part. Again, you always put that asterisk there that we know we can get better and we can get more consistent in some other areas. But, you know, all in all, I think we're in a pretty good shape for what our expectations are or were. And, you know, individually, we've got a lot of players that are scoring better than they did last year. And we got a couple of areas like the penalty killing that we've talked about in the past couple of weeks that we want to improve on. And we actually, since Christmas time, we're actually doing a much better job in that area. The competition is tough. I mean, tonight we got Las Vegas, who's in our conference, and they're the number one team. Who would have thought that? Every night it seems like the Central Division just wins games over everybody else, and our division is really getting close. I think we're, 9 points from top to bottom.
Yep.
Halfway through the year. I mean, I can't remember it ever being that close. You got teams that were predicted not to do well, like Colorado, that not to make the playoffs. They've won 7 in a row. Calgary looked like they were kind of fading there. They've now won 7 in a row. Dallas goes to Boston, who hadn't lost a game, seems like, in about 2 months, and beats them in overtime last night. So we got our work cut out for us. So the bottom line is, whatever we did or whatever we think of the first half of the season, I really, truly believe we're going to have to be better in the second half of the season to, A, make the playoffs, and then to go from there to get home ice advantage or to win this division.
By the way, the Sagan goal yesterday in Boston, ooh, wow. That was unbelievable. If you haven't seen it, go back and look at that video. So this Vegas team, you know, I understand the fans. There's been a lot of fans. We've fielded calls. They're angry because Vegas is not supposed to be good this fast because a lot of these fans have been here with the organization since day one. But what I've said is, look, one, they paid for this, so they get a little bit of unfair advantages because they paid a lot more. But two, you have to give George McPhee some credit. You have to give Gallant, the coach, credit because they still had to put this team together and it still had to all work. It is working, but it's not like the league and they gave Vegas a magic wand and they just poof. Here you have the best team in the Western Conference as of today.
Yeah, absolutely. Some changes to the rules to their advantage in that, but clearly George McPhee is very experienced. Manager, his coach is very experienced, and Gerard Gallant, he had a plan, he had a vision, and they worked the system perfectly. I mean, it's, you know, again, there's a couple more teams in the league than when we came in, so you got like four more players, so that's four more assets you get to work with. It's also in the salary cap age, which is the first time it's been an expansion team, I believe, in the salary cap, and there's lots of teams, including ourselves, that looked at that as a way to maybe you know, change your salary structure around a little bit. In our case, we protected their players like, say, Sissons or Yarncroc, or try to keep them. And we lost somebody like James Neal, who's going to be going to the All-Star game because of his salary versus theirs, age, et cetera, et cetera. Their goalie tonight, Fleury, who's won Stanley Cups. Pittsburgh couldn't afford to keep him. And not only did they get Fleury, who's an All-Star Stanley Cup winning goaltender, but they actually got a draft choice to do that. Florida, that had some financial problems, they let go Marshall, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, he's got like 20-plus goals. They just signed
a new extension.
Yeah, for 5 or 6 years. And they got Riley Smith, who's playing on their first line, to take him. So those
two first-line players.
That's right. Their first line is. And so that's never happened before in expansion where they had that many different opportunities. But, again, I do not want to take away from what George McPhee and all of his scouting people did. They've done a fantastic job, and they've got depth. They also got a lot of draft choices, which they haven't even used. I mean, they're when I'm looking at their prospects right now, and I'd say after next year, after this draft in 18, they might have one of the top five depth charts, if you will, and have the best prospects. So this isn't a fluke, and it's not like they're going to go away next year.
Yesterday, David, the Titans had a press conference, and they parted ways with Mike Mularkey. And it was very clear the GM had just a different vision. He felt like maybe Mike Mularkey had taken this as far as he could take it. And you know how this works, that maybe that was the ceiling, and that was a good ceiling for the last couple of seasons for their franchise. You've kind of been through this before with a guy that people liked, the players liked, the fans liked, the media liked, but that was your hand-picked guy. This case was different. But then at some point you had to come up with, okay, I think maybe this has gone as far, which is a tough decision. And we know it's all worked out. But kind of take us through, because that's the part, you know, everybody wants to be a GM until you have to make decisions like that. And that's where I'm not envious of your job.
Well, again, my track record with coaches, I think, is pretty good. As a general manager for 35 years, I've only worked with five different coaches, and now being 20 years in Nashville, Barry Trotz and Peter Laviolette have been the only two coaches. I kind of, you know, when you talk to them, you sort of get their philosophies, and there's no question that Barry Trotz is a different coach and wants to play a little bit different way than Peter Laviolette. But I also think it's the management's responsibility for whoever they have as a coach to get the players that play into the system that the coach wants to play. So, I mean, I don't want to have a coach that wants to play a different system than me. With Barry Trotz, we were on the same page. After 15 years, I thought maybe it was time to play a little bit different way. So it wasn't like I lost faith in Barry as a coach, or we couldn't still be successful with Barry. I think it was just, you know, it was a big difference between 3 years for Mularkey and 15 years for Barry Trotz. I think we need to play a different way. So I was, you know.
And the game was changing too.
And the game was changing. That's very fair to say that. And some of the onus was on myself and on our scouts to get and bring in different types of players. So I was excited about the change in the way that Peter wanted to play. And I think it got us all moving in a different direction in terms of what type of players we drafted or acquired. But again, we were always on the same page. And that's really the bottom line, is the management has to be on the same page as the coach and the coaching staff, or something's got to give.
Sports hockey is not the only one where you have a review system or you can challenge for a review. So we see it in different sports. We take for granted that we think that, oh, just every coach that challenges, well, they usually have a really high success rate. It's not the case at all. Why does Peter Laviolette seem to have – he understands the right time to challenge. It's really worked out for him, and I know there are people behind the scenes and video coaches and people helping him, but everybody has that. They're supposed to have a support staff that's helping them, saying, hey, coach, challenge it. We see something. I think you've got something here. But why has it worked out so well for Peter Laviolette?
Well, I think you have to give the support staff and the video guys – almost all the credit, because what Peter's doing with the other coaches on the bench is things are going too fast. Visually, what he might see on a offsides challenge, and same for me way upstairs looking at it, may be incorrect or maybe totally different when the video guys are looking at it. And it's really their call. And again, it's that's got to be like the toughest job. I just imagine they must be sweating bullets to make that call, because when you're wrong, it's not only a goal against you, but then you have a penalty. So when you go back to the last game in Edmonton, in theory, the game is tied, and then we get a penalty if we're incorrect. They score in a power play, we lose the game. So what really happened was the video guys were right. They didn't get the goal, and we went on to win.
Well, we saw it play out here, Philadelphia. Yeah. It went against them.
Exactly.
Right.
So what a difference it can make, and we've been correct in a few situations. So the video guys have a system in there, and they have right away on every goal that's scored, for example, they are looking at that right away. A lot of times on entries, they're looking at it right away. That looks like something might be close, so that they're having advanced knowledge. And then they have one more advantage. Is we have these what they're called Hawkeye cameras that you'll see at the end of the very end of a decision. Sometimes at this is what the league has and what they have in Toronto.
Right.
And those are the cameras that are right on the blue line. And this is where you can really see that skate in the air, you know, situation a little bit more clear than everywhere else. And none of us, including the coaches, have that ability to see that. So it's a team effort for sure.
David Poile is with us, Predators general manager, and the Predators take on the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. It's always tough to play the first game after the bye week, but one thing that I started to see with Ryan Ellis coming back, it does look like it's sort of settled down. Would you agree that the overall defensive game, they've won a 2-1 game. They protected a lead pretty well down the stretch in Los Angeles. That Ryan Ellis looks like he's got something to do with that.
Yeah, I feel the same way. That's a good expression. It's sort of settled down. I think we're in a good place right now. I think we're playing a little bit better defensively than we've played all year long. We haven't scored as much as we were earlier in the year, and we're playing a lot of those games where we're getting four goals, and now we're back to maybe, you know, three seems to be the magic number. And again, for the Edmonton game, the last game, two was the number. So Ellie's a top player. I think he's feeling good about his game right now. You know, defense pairs have been changed around a little bit. I don't think we're giving up as many chances. I think we're just playing, you know, closer to the vest, which is a good thing. So then I'd like to get everybody healthy and then take it up a notch offensively, and then we'll be real good.
You've talked some about Ellie Tolvanen, your first-round pick last year, who has exceeded expectations. He's played really well in the KHL. Recently, he was in the World Junior Championships. What do you continue to look for him in your mind? Because you've said it. You wouldn't mind taking a look at him as a possibility. He's on your radar. Could he possibly be a guy that could help this team this year? But that's a tough call, and you've got a lot to process there.
Yeah, exactly. First of all, we have to have a discussion with his agent and the player when the season ends, and to see if this is what they want to do. We've made overtures to them that we would be interested, and I think they have some interest, but we have to let his season play out and see how well he does down the stretch and in the playoffs in the KHL. I think you're looking. We're bringing our scouts in this week actually, so we're having our both amateur and pro meetings, and we'll be talking a lot about the trading deadline. And in my mind, any trade that we're going to be looking at will always be compared to what we have in our depth, whether it be in Milwaukee or even with a prospect like Tolvanen. And those will be things that, in our conversations leading up to the deadline, both with other teams and then also with, say, Tolvanen's agent, we'll kind of use that as a comparison. But as I said before, I mean, Tolvanen looks like a real good prospect, and the sooner that we could bring him into our organization, that would be great for us. If that would happen this year and before the season is over and before the playoffs, I think that would be a good thing. But we got to work with he and his agent to see if that's exactly what they want to do.
How difficult is it to translate somebody who's excelling in the KHL to what that would look like over here? Because it's probably different for different people, right? But you're hearing a lot of comparisons. Well, look at how many points and goals he's got compared to this player or that player, and it looks like, wow, that might translate.
Yeah, it. We certainly hope it is. I mean, the good news is that Tolvanen played in the USHL the last couple of years, so he's played in North America. He speaks good English. He's played on the North American-sized arena, obviously. But, again, you're talking a big difference between the USHL and then to the KHL and then possibly the NHL, but you're not going to know until you do that. And I just think he... By results and what we see in our scouting, it seems like he's a little bit ahead of his age group right now, and So I'm just going to repeat myself. You know, we'd like to talk to them, and if they feel it's the right time, I'm pretty sure that we might feel it's the right time to bring them over and give them some exposure here to the North American game sooner than later.
There's different stages of development. As you mentioned, when you brought in Peter Laviolette, it was maybe a different stage. You were still building the roster. Now I think it's pretty clear you guys are in a window where you're trying to win. You're trying to add that last piece. So as you have a few weeks now to evaluate. You've said you might look at maybe adding one more piece. How tough is that to weigh, knowing that you're in a window, but at the same time you don't want to mortgage the future. You've got to keep that good stable of young players coming in.
Well, exactly, and we've given up some young players, and like to get Kyle Turris, giving up Kamenev, and giving up Jarry. That's two guys that were going to be playing for us, this year. So, you know, you got to weigh that. The good news is we do have some. Depth and guys that aren't signed like Tolvanen that you just talked about, Dante Fabro, our defenseman that's a former first-round pick, and we got some guys that are coming along in Milwaukee. But having said that, we're going to look at everything that might be available at the trading deadline. And, you know, I don't think that we're in a position that we're beggars, if you will, but I do think if the right opportunity presents itself that we're going to jump in there. But, you know, 6 weeks to plan and to look at different things. I got to know where we are too when we get to the trading deadline. Are we playing really well? Are we having any problems? Do we have how's our injury situation? You know, and when we get really close to the deadline, that will be the time to either make a move or just say we're happy with where we are. But it's not going to be without exploring everything that's available to us.
You mentioned that you weren't sure that Kyle Turris would end up being a guy that might be available in a trade, but you identified him as a guy at the stage of his career and his contract status that, who knows, maybe that could materialize, and it sort of did. Without getting into names, do you think, I mean, every year is different. Sometimes there just seems to be nothing out there that fits what you're trying to trade for, whether that be a forward or a defenseman or a goalie or whatever. But as you look on the radar, do you think certain guys that might fit, is this a year where you might have a few of those guys out there, or is it too early to tell?
Well, I can't, name that, but in our preparation, I mean, we're looking at free agents that will be free agents in 18 and 19, not too much further out than that. You look at their age, their position, what they're making, what you think they would make. You got to do some calculations. Could this player, fit in if he was willing to come here as a free agent to your team? And, whose job would he take? Do you have the money in your cap for it? All those things. We're doing that on a daily basis. And, that's honestly how Turris's name, came up, is that if he didn't sign in Ottawa, would he want to play here? Would that be a fit for us? And the more we looked at it, the more it made sense. And then it seemed to make sense in the deal, and we got it done. So it's I guess it's a lot of preparation to get to that point. But yeah, we're doing that all the time. And again, there's always going to be players available. It's just whether it's a fit for you, they want to play for you, or the dollars are right. It's just a combination of a lot of things.
Last thing, David, whenever this room, such a good room, and overall, all the years you've been here, I mean, just I think hockey players in general, but right here in Nashville, these guys have been great to deal with. Not everybody's a choir boy, but when you look into exploring trades, Kyle Turris has come in and he's fit in just perfectly. I mean, he's exactly what you expect to see in that locker room. Seamless transition and a really good guy to deal with. But when you're talking about an outsider, and you don't really know, and you're not around them on a daily basis. Like, the Ribeiro situation was different because his story was unique. He came in the offseason, he plopped himself right down in front of you, and you got to spend several days with him. You don't have that luxury in a trade deadline situation. If there's a guy out there that's questionable, how do you handle that without really knowing?
Well, that's a good question, because you try to do as much investigation as you can. I mean, again, myself, Paul Fenton, a lot of us been around for a lot of years, and whether you know their agents, or you've run into these players from time to time, or it could be a USA situation where I've worked with different guys. You're just hoping that your experience gives you enough knowledge, and that you're right about a player's character, and that he does fit into your room. But sometimes you're more desperate than other times when you make a signing, and you don't forget the golden rules, so to speak, but you bend the rules a little bit because you need certain things. So I try to have my direction and philosophy set as best possible. I try with our staff to get to know as much as I can about a player before we before we execute on a deal. Our amateurs do a great job in terms of the character background before we draft a player. But having said that, you never entirely know how a guy's going to fit into your group until you have him. That's not only just his character, but on ice and off the ice. I mean, Turris, I mean, we had a really good feeling on him, and people said a lot of good things about him, et cetera, et cetera. But what really was perfect was where we came in, fit into the lineup. So it's that combination, really, that makes it work real well. And we'll just hope that we'll make some good decisions when it comes time to making trades.
Knowing your room is so strong, does that give you more confidence that, you know, somebody, especially this team has won, they've got a reputation around the league of, hey, this team is trying to win the whole thing, that maybe you have more confidence bringing an outsider in, even if, you know, to say this guy's either going to fall in line or he's not going to play.
No, absolutely. I think that's a really good way of setting it up. And again, I think our players played together, the bulk of them now. We're probably over half our team for a couple of years together. Chemistry is great. Culture is great. And bringing somebody into our team, I mean, it's not going to be hard to fit into our team if you're a good person and you want to win and you work hard. So I think we got a lot of good things going for us right now. So, you know, when it comes to the trading deadline, I'm not trying to take myself or our guys off the hook. If we didn't do anything, I don't think that's the end of the world based on where we are in the standings and what I think the potential of our team is. But we're still going to look at everything possible if we can make this team a little bit better as we make our run for the playoffs and try to do some damage this year in the playoffs.
David, I don't know if you recently got a fireplace installed in your office. If you did, go get warm. If you didn't, go find a fireplace and get warm.
All right. We're going to warm this place up tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Fireplay. Okay.
Hey, good seeing you. Thanks for doing this.
Bye-bye.
Predators GM David Poile. We'll take a quick break. By the way, free small popcorn and a soda if you're going to be here tonight in attendance for the Predators and the Golden Knights. More of 3D coming up next on 102.5 The Game.